Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Kodiak Shack podcast. Today, we have Julian Capps for his third time on the podcast. He's from Crowdbotics, as you know, and they're working on some AI stuff. We have Bender here and Admin, as usual, up front. Thank you, everybody. Like, share, subscribe, and comment. Send us messages. Tell us how we're doing, poor or well, at info@kodiakshack.com. Donations are always open. It's in the show notes. I normally say that at the end, so if you don't make it to the end of the episodes, then you probably don't hear that part. Another addition, if you're watching, you may have noticed, but if you're only listening, Bender and I have our Kodiak Shack hats on. We are getting into the hat game. So if you like the hats, let us know. And we're going to start buying some more hats to give out maybe as some prizes for guests or for some listeners. So thank you, everybody who listens. We're going to get right into it. Julian, you already told us about yourself multiple times. So unless you got anything to add, we're just going to jump into flying stories with Bender.
Nothing to add, dude. I'm here. I'm back. I'm ready. Return trip number three. I'm ready for more Lord of the Rings comparisons. Yeah. I'm ready to dive right in.
Well, it's the first time with me and Julian together.
So that's true.
This is a bromance waiting to pop off.
Yeah. I know you'll be unimpressed, but you know, whatever. I do what I can. You're like, wait, what?
The hat's a good start.
Water here from East Palestine, from the Ohio River. East Palestine, sourced directly from the East Palestine.
Light it on fire.
Yeah.
So Bender, what how's the flying been out there?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. I don't know. Winter was rough. We got so much snow in Utah, which is awesome. But there's Alta, one of our ski resorts, got over 800 inches, which is, I don't do math super well, but that's like, you know, tens
Sounds
of
like
feet.
Yeah,
it's like nearly 1,000 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pressing on. Anyway, so they like published, they're like, we're going to try to go, you know, 365 degrees or days, not degrees, of skiing this year. So they're going to try to stay open all summer long because they have that much snow. They don't think it's going to melt, which is pretty crazy. Anyway, that's so wild. All that goes into the flying because we just haven't done very much this winter. We've been trying to, but every time, for me, I think I've flown maybe 4 or 5 times a month, like since December, with 4 or 5 cancels just because there's just snow constantly falling. And it's not Misawa. So Misawa, we had tons of snow. And it was like a well orchestrated, you know, operation for them to all drive in formation and clear the runway. But Hill is not like that. So if it snows in the morning, then it's going to be 2 hours before you have a shot at even taxiing that aircraft out to the runways. So anyway, it's been a slow winter flying wise, which is, you know, it's good. You get to ski more often than we probably should. But anyway, so it's been a good time.
Yeah. Good fights out there. Beating
Pretty
up on
good.
People.
Yeah, you know, we beat up on each other mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't do a whole lot. We got to get more people out here, more dissimilar aircraft, because most of the time it's just, well, sometimes we'll go up to Mountain Home and fly with the Strike Eagles, which is always a good time. The radar signature of a Strike Eagle is, you know, like New York City, basically. So you can see them, like, as soon as they start taxiing over, like, 20 knots, you know, like they start populating on everybody's sensors. They're seen forever after that. So that's always fun. And they never, you know, they actually have pretty good radar. So they eventually will find Fat Amy when we get close enough. But that's it. We got to get some Fresno Eagles out there so we can kind of mop up a little bit, which I heard maybe we'll just transition right over to Eagle stories.
Yeah, well, I, you know, flying around, I'd say I am happy to bring some C models out there and fight or bring some 35s out to Fresno because that'd be good time. I did have, which I appreciated if they are listening, I ran into two listeners, people I didn't actually know, not like my mom and stuff, but they were like, hey, Bader, like from Kodiak Shack. And I was like, holy cow, people actually listen. Check that out. So I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for saying hi when we met and when you saw me. But yeah, so I've been flying around now that I'm back home. And we were lucky enough to get some F-35C support. So the Navy variant of the F-35 for some of our upgrades. And we had four F-15Cs flying Blue Air, and then a handful of F-35s and F-15Cs flying Red Air. And I was on Red Air, so I didn't really get to see it. But it turns out the F-35s, when they are flying Red Air, are not easy to find. And they were slitting throats. It was one of those, like, yep, we had SA on everyone, and this person's dead, and also his wingman. And it was like, oof. And then, you know, it's bad for everybody who doesn't fly this stuff. You know, when you're Red Air, the end goal should be you die. You know, the Blue Air finds you, they shoot you, and then the Blue Air is supposed to win. So when Red Air will terminate, so they're like, ah, nobody killed me, I'm just going to go fly back and like start over because nobody's killing me and it's kind of getting old now. The 35s did that a few times. And they luckily, maybe they were repping 35 loadouts because they probably could have killed more people, but they were like, I'm out of missiles. Yeah. So they just went back.
I was going to say, the only time I've ever paid attention to Red Air loadouts is like in the Viper, you shoot a couple of missiles as Red Air and die. So it didn't ever matter. But in Fat Amy, like, you'll, as Red Air, shoot a bunch of people, and then in the debriefs, they're like, did you have that missile? Like, I've never counted before, but yeah, because you live long enough to actually take multiple shots. It's kind of...
Yeah, and actually run out of missiles?
Yeah, you run out of missiles, and you gotta go regen or whatever. Yeah.
What's, sorry, real quick for the layman non-pilot, what's Fat Amy? Hornet?
F-35.
No, that's the F-35,
oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
right,
because she's thick.
She's thick. Yeah. She's fun to hang out with, though, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the funny thing is, which I was this close, to actually getting to fight dissimilar BFM high aspect against the 35, and I walk out to my jet, and there's a pod hanging off the center pylon, and I was like, go! So they were like, well, you're not fighting the 35. So I got to watch why my IP fought the 35, and I was like, this is really lame.
Did he just crush it? I've never fought an Eagle.
Yeah, my IP, he ran out of gas pretty quick, so we were, because the whole point I was flying was to knock out a tanker square, so we were like, hey, we'll fight the 35 real quick before we go to the tanker, and so the F-15C and the F-35C did a high aspect, so where you meet, like, beak to beak, and then you just start fighting mainly in the vertical, and it seemed like it was not going great for the F-35, but then my IP ran out of gas, so he was like, well, that's it. So, I've heard, I've never fought him, but I've heard that the F-35, once it gets to a visual engagement, does not fare well against most other fighters.
Yeah, I don't, probably not. But, you know, I don't know, who knows? Most likely an F-15C is going to have bags. Right, so maybe what we should really do is fight F-35V, you know, two bags of gas on a C model, and then see how we go.
See, the
because my
the,
guess is we're gonna be okay, right?
The I don't thing know. That I've noticed is actually, so you know, F-16, because I assume you're taking like F-16 knowledge. F-16, you put two bags of gas on that thing, and it's a bomb dropper. It's not like a BFM machine. And hey, go.
Yeah, that is true. It's a pig.
Yeah, so it's not a BFM machine. Turns out the C model, once you get the gas out of the bags, it's pretty much full up. So you end up, like, he was too bad yesterday or the other day. And,
oh, and still.
Yeah, and it was.
Still owning it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was cool to see. It would have been a lot more cool to be in the fight. but, yeah, a lot of fun. And, turns out, even with ESA radars, the 35 is it's pretty sneaky.
Yeah, a little slippery.
Yeah.
I was talking the other day about Red Air, and, like, you kind of don't, like, it depends, maybe y'all educate me here, but you don't necessarily want Red Air to just get in there and, like, kick ass and just take everyone out, depending on the exercise. Like, ostensibly, Red Air should, like, represent a credible, reasonable threat, and then every now and again just like go off? Is that kind of, are there like set, what do you do if you're playing Red Air? Do you have like a playbook, or did they just say like, you know, put these other Blue Air pilots to their limits?
It depends on the day. Like I think Bender and I have both seen, we call it the Red Air superhero, you know, like he's like, yeah, like I'm going to beat you yeah. all. And it's like weird, you know, our tactic. So you're going to just like do anything yeah, you can yeah. to defeat our tactic. So technically Red Air should kind of try to, like you said, replicate some realistic, you know, adversary capability, tactic, you know, stuff like that, threat, rather than just go out and just try like the, one of the funniest ones was Bender and I, our first squadron, this guy, his Red Air objective, a guy in our squadron was named Mello, and who was his upgrade, and it was just murder Mello's face. Like that was the only thing they wanted to do that day, just kill him. And sure enough, they did, because they just messed with him. And so that's not really the goal. But then when you're doing like continuation training, you'll kind of let Red Air go a little, what we'd call like wild dingo, just like, hey, just do what you can. And I assume the 35 Bender, do you guys kind of let Red Air get a little more wily just because, you know, you're 35s?
Yeah, we try to push it up a little bit. So what you want, like Vader said, you want wily Red Air, which means like you want the guys trying within their cuffs, because when you do go out, like you're saying, you know what kind of threat you're replicating. So you know the limitations, you know their tactics. But you want guys to use those and then try their best to kill you. Like Vader's killed me many times as Ritter, and I, you know, like that's the purpose. And I will like try to kill Vader because it's fun. But when you cross over to Ritter superhero, it's when you start to make decisions based off of, you know, things that they wouldn't know necessarily, like where Mello is, for instance. Like, you know, he's in that jet, so you're gonna like run all your tactics to kill that particular person. You know, that's where you cross the line a little bit. But yeah,
yeah, it's kind of waste of gas.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just a lot of fun. Like that yeah. probably would have been fun to murder Mello's face.
Settle personal vendettas on the yeah. battlefield. Yeah, the synthetic battlefield. Yeah.
Well, and that's one of my.
You remember? Were you in Torch's Finny Flight in Misawa? Remember that one? I don't know if you.
Yeah,
were.
Where it was just like we just did like a roving biker gang was the tactic
of DCA. Like it was like calm out. Yeah, yeah, they weren't allowed to talk on the radios. Blue Air. And then Red Air had to pick out of a hat different limitations. I don't know if you remember that. Or out of whatever. He like wrote down little things. So one of them was like, you can only turn left. So the entire sortie Red Air, Red Air jet could only turn left the entire time. And one was like, you can only shoot if you're upside down, or like just like stupid stuff or whatever. So it was not a waste of gas. It was a lot of fun actually. But, you know, the Red Air was doing obviously things that, you know, they wouldn't be limited to. But so sometimes you just go have fun with the Red Air.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then yeah, because of course, like...
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, every now and again, open it up. See, like, if you can really put the Blue Air pilot, you know, to challenge him, like, push him 100%.
Yeah, what? Almost none of our... I don't know. It might be different for Raider, but we... It doesn't go very smoothly ever. So we do so much training... when Blue Air is just supposed to house it, but the way we do it is we always try to make it hard enough to fail, basically. And so there's a couple of times when you will have just slain it and feel really good about yourself. But the vast majority of times people die and, you know, it doesn't look good when you come back and watch, you're like, ew. So.
When I think we want our training Red Air to be more difficult than the real ones. You know, you want your best bad guy to be the training bad guy, so whatever you see in the real world is not as bad as that guy. So I think that's definitely one of the things where, you know, we had, again, when Benner and I had our first assignment, there was kind of a unwritten, not rule, but kind of like a guide from our patch. He said, like, you challenge the title. So when you're Red Air, you know who Blue Air is, and you like, you know who the best one on Blue Air is, and you're like, I'm going to do my best, again, within the cuffs, to kill him, because he's yeah. not supposed to die, and he's good. So if I, with limitations, can defeat him, then, like, that's a little feather in your cap. So, yeah, it would always, like, I still remember Jikdo, great dude. He was, like, putting on his G-suit. He was like, challenge the title today, because he was a weapons officer, and a black border weapons officer, so instructor for weapons officer, he was like, I got to challenge the title. Like, I got to challenge the guy who is also very capable. So I always appreciated that and, you know, kind of brought that along with my, through my career. So Julian, what's some current events? What do you got going on out there in the innovation world?
Dude, current events are tough. It's not gotten any easier out here for the working contractor, the four letter word contractors. We're still out here trying to waste the taxpayer's dollar. We're trying to make a difference. As a small company, and I've talked about this before on here, but we represent like kind of a lot of the market has given up on trying to get into the defense space out of Silicon Valley. And I think we represent a company that has, I don't want to speak too soon, but bridged the valley of death just by sheer will and some people forgetting that I exist in the board of the company and sort of let me exist over in a silo. But yeah, I think we represent that pretty well because we are so skewed towards the commercial market. Like our private sector side of the business is so much, it's like 10 to 1, 9 to 1 commercial to defense. And so we represent in that way Silicon Valley. We have a board of Silicon Valley people. We have executives of Silicon Valley people. Our sales ideology, our like hiring policies, all of our internal stuff, the tools we use, the like software that we use, the way that we coach developers. One kind of actual bad bullet point on that list, the international nature of the company, remote first company, all of that stuff, we fall neatly into this kind of Silicon Valley market, prototypical Silicon Valley medium-sized company. But then we stuck with it. You know, there's all these other companies are like, what are you doing? Why are, you know, I think a lot of investors are probably telling their companies, yeah, if it works out, but for the most part, go with the quick money. And we stuck with it. We really faced adversity right off the get-go. We had a small Cyber Phase 1 that didn't go anywhere, and I think that's probably where a lot of companies bow out. We had a Cyber Phase 2 sort of fall in our lap. Shout out POTUS Lipkin. And I think we knocked it out of the park, and that gave me enough kind of motivation to keep going. Just keep shaking hands, keep talking to people, keep seeing. It was too promising. The reaction we would get from pilots like y'all every time I would talk to like a new pilot, the reaction was too promising. So we just kind of kept our head and kept moving forward, kept it pushing. And then now we're in with the 422. I don't know how much I should say, but we're doing contracts with the 422 59th out at Nellis. I think that's about as exciting as it gets for a company of our size with the mission that we're trying to chip in on. And we have another contract, another Cyber Phase 2, and now we're kind of planting seeds all over the CAF. So looking good, slow coming. I think, you know, one major deal that just happened for us was that 422 59th contract. So getting in there and working, I don't know how much y'all are aware of all that stuff that they're doing over there, but trying to modernize data analytics coming out of the jet for the F-35 and for the rest of the platforms, trying to bridge the gap, and maybe I'm getting ahead of what they're thinking, but trying to bridge proficiency data across the simulated environment and live flight. So listen to one kind of cool thing, Bender, when you were talking about Hill, I was thinking about the diversity of kind of like landscape. Nitter, or it, I don't know if I should pronounce it Nitter or NTTR, but Nitter is like badass, right? It's like the bomb. It's the best of the best, but it's just the desert. It doesn't represent Ukraine, for example. It doesn't represent like mountains. And so trying to like see what we can build up, see what the USAF can build up. We see what y'all can build up on the synthetic side, or the simulator side rather.
Well, I think a lot of things there. The 422 is awesome because it's operational test. So it has every MDS. So every fighter type flies out of there. So they all integrate, they all share spaces. So that's awesome because then you actually get a lot of crosstalk. And then beyond that, they're operational tests. So it's like, how do we help develop future tactics? How do we take technology today that we didn't have yesterday that we can use tomorrow? So it's a great spot, especially for emerging tech, data analytics types. And then you're not pigeonholed into one aircraft type. You know, people and other aircraft are getting exposure. I would say, and Bender, you can speak to this more, is a lot of the legit fights, the real intense fights, are probably happening in the sims more than anywhere else now, just because we're running into airspace limitations where we have airspace that are massive and they're not big enough. And so it's difficult with threat emitters and all the things that you can try to replicate. But the reality is it's easier just to go in a simulated world and execute. What do you think, Bender?
Yeah, definitely the highest. I mean, that's obviously the highest end replication for threats that you can get is, and there's even tiers of simulators. So our simulators at Hill are, they're pretty good or whatever, but they're fairly limited. And then we actually go TDY to a different place that has full up simulators that are, Vader's giving me the look that worries me.
No, I want to know. Yeah.
Am I crossing? Yeah. Okay. No. But they have contract Red Air so Red Air flies simulators against the, that usually Red Air in simulators is just, it's AI or whatever. So they just do their little thing. But in the full up, super well modeled, high end simulators, there's actually other pilots there that are flying, trying to, murder your face to go along with the mellow theme or whatever. So it's pretty cool. But that's the best you can get.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's diverse scenarios, right? You can drop in a whatever aircraft right next door, completely impossible at in the real life flight range. That's an interesting thing. Is being in the same damn building important? Flying versus a synthetic red, that's just a program, just AI, versus there's a guy in the clamshell or whatever, the dome 20 feet away, who's flying in the same simulated environment. Is that makes a difference?
Yeah, it makes probably the biggest difference. The modeling is also way better. So that's a huge difference. It's way more accurate to what the actual threats can do. But we've talked about this before, but the best flown F-35, if a computer knew all the tactics and could fly it to the jet's max performance versus, a Su-35's max performance, we have charts for that, which one's going to win in what environment or whatever. But really, none of us you can't fly the fighters like that. So it comes down to the human in the cockpit. And if it's just AI doing it, then you don't really get a good feel for the decision-making of, especially in the F-35, we have tactics that are meant to do things to a person, not necessarily just the other airframe. And so when there's a person making those decisions in the Red Air simulator, then you kind of see those advantages or some of the disadvantages, he didn't react the way I thought he reacted. He did something different and killed me.
That's a good point, is thinking about, you're not necessarily just attacking the jet, you're attacking the pilot.
Yeah, and when we train, we try to attack the jet. Vader was saying, when we're Red Air, we try to make the Red Air as capable as the jet is capable. But in real life, fighting a war is super hard. That's why Russia is just grinding itself against Ukraine without any progress. It turns out that, it's hard. Warfare is hard, and especially, I think, I don't know enough. We'd have to get some actual experts. But the Air Force, what has happened between Russia and Ukraine's air force has been pretty eye-opening as far as how ineffective Russia's air force has been against a pretty small and not super, advanced air force in Ukraine. It ends up being, it's a really hard thing to do well, and we train as hard as we can to do it well. So I think, hopefully we're as good as we try to be. But if you don't train that way, then you end up being like Russia and you just can't do it. Even though you have pretty good technology.
It seems like the sim, I can't stop saying sim recently, because it seems like it's finally caught up. It feels like everybody probably, y'all probably knew for years and years and years that this day was going to come where the sim is damn near as valuable, if not as valuable, if not more valuable than sortie, hours in live flight for training. And it feels like it's gotten there. It feels like some of the sims that I've seen that are on Unclass are so damn high fidelity, haptic feedback, like really, really top-notch stuff. It's just software. It's easier. It's air-conditioned. It's on base. Like, it's so much simpler than flying. It's getting to that point, right?
Well, I think that's kind of the problem is that, and Bender, because this is the beautiful difference between fourth gen fighters and fifth gen fighters, is fourth gen fighters, one, they're not getting the money anymore. So the sims don't keep up. Like right now, the sims that I have access to cannot replicate the threat that I fight on a daily basis because we don't put money into them. And the problem with the sim is the sim, it's zeros and ones. So it's like, unless it's a true AI that like can make, you know, the sun is behind you. So the sun is like glaring on your screen and you're like, I can't see that information. You know, this is a fourth gen problem, but there's like radios don't work as well. So it's like, I can't, that person's really weak. Or right when the picture call happened, telling me where all the bad guys were, it got all garbled, you know? So there's stuff that in the sim you just don't get. So, you know, fighting real people in the sim does help because I think there'll be that human aspect. But like you said, it's 1G, it's zero knots. You're not actually pulling Gs. You're not up at 40 some thousand feet, like, you know, getting that weird like pressure on your eardrums because the environmental control system that's like keeping your cockpit pressurized is struggling. So you're like trying to fly the jet and shoot missiles, but you're like, is this jet about to have a rapid decompression up here? You know, and that's like a fourth gen thing, but all of those things weigh in to like your ability to execute. And then, you know, just that inherent survival instinct, you know, you're flying jets and you're like, you get super nose low or you get super fast.
Yeah.
When you're 10, like those are the things when I'm in the sim, I'm just like going wild. Like I'm not worried about it. But in the jet, it's like, oh yeah, I give a few more brain bites to the like keep myself alive aspect of it. Bender, do you feel like having flown the Viper sims for a long time, are the 35 sims like more accurate? Because you know how the F-16 sim was like King Kong compared to the actual jet.
It probably is a little bit more accurate. There are definitely some limitations to it still, though. At least the ones that we use here on the base. Mm-hmm. So then they're not exactly like the jet. They don't get updated as quickly as the jet's getting updated. So you're working off some older stuff than you necessarily are flying with. But it's, again, it's not exactly accurate. But you're right, Julian. Like as far as, well, what we really use them for is like just the repetitions. Like, you know, if we were a Major League Baseball team, the sims are used for like doing, you know, 100 grounders and whatever, like turning 100 double plays in the practice so that when you actually get in the game, you maybe only turn one double play or whatever, but it's just ingrained in you so you know exactly what to do with your fingers or whatever. That's what we use the sims for, and luckily they're that good now that you can start to do those things with a lot more stuff than we could like in previous sims. Like in the old days, it was mostly for emergency procedures, you know, and like little things, but now the avionics are good enough to where you can, you know, the avionic, whatever, I don't know, what do you call it, Vader? I don't know, all the like the little beeps and squeaks that we do with our fingers.
PVI, the HOTAS pilot functions. Vehicle interface? Yeah,
sure. Anyway, that's good enough now to where those repetitions matter in the jet, but you can't. There was a time when they're like, oh, you know, we'll just do all F-35 CT. So all continuation of training in F-35. So those are the sorties we're supposed to do per month to stay proficient. You know, they're like, we can just do, you know, 10 simulators and just do 2 sorties just to get the landing and the takeoff down or whatever. And every pilot's like, that is a terrible idea. And it is. It's an absolutely terrible idea.
Damn.
It's not so that ballsy. Good. Yeah, it's not there. And it probably will never be there because like Vader's saying, like, once you introduce all the real world stuff that happens, like there was it was Vader's jet 921 at Misawa
it was a peach,
super slick, awesome, airplane. But then I don't know what happened to it, but
shouts out 921.
Yeah.
when we got back from a deployment, so on the deployment, like everybody wanted to fly 921 cause it just slayed. When we got back home to Misawa, we would fly with it and it had a gremlin to where anytime you wanted to hear a radio call, it would just like squelch at you. So like I like took off for a red flag sortie. And of course, like I make my radio call to the ATC to like check in. And then as soon as they start talking, it's like, until they're done talking.
Yeah.
You're like, I didn't hear any of that. And so you like finally make you make your way to the fight, and you're like, this is terrible. And then of course in the fight you're like, picture, and they're like, blah blah blah, and you can't hear all the important data for that airplane was like unusable. So then you had to use like the aux radio with the wingman to find out, you know, what was going on with the fight. Anyway, that stuff happens. Every jet has like little things, every sortie that happened like that.
Yeah.
And so if you're doing it perfectly in the sim every time, you're never going to figure out how to, you know, how do you manage a fight with all those little limitations that end up happening?
Yeah,
so you got to do the real thing.
Yeah. Well, or like, well, for sure. Right now you got to do the real thing. I guess I almost feel like I'm wrong. Like y'all have like shown me the error of my thinking. Like it's not there yet. Even now it's not there yet. And second, like you'd have to introduce screw ups. You'd have to introduce shit like that to keep it accurate or to keep it useful. You would have to like program in failures of comms or like glare or something, like all sorts of crap, like would have to go wrong in the sim to be even a fraction of vectors.
Well, and it's all that stuff. It's like, I can't remember where it was, but one of the displays in the F-16 over the years, it was in green scale, if that makes sense. It was supposed to be a color display, but it would only display shades of green.
Oh, like the Matrix.
Yeah. So you just like hop in the jet and you're like, why is everything green? Like, okay.
Banging on it.
Yeah.
And
that's the thing. Like there's so much of that in flying jets because they're just so complex. And it's like, there are so many variables that like on any given day, like Bender was saying, that you just have to have like random issues. Like your radios are weak or your HUD is just like slightly out of focus and you're like, okay, I guess I just deal with this today. Or, you know, so that's one of the things I think the sim, and not to poo-poo on the sim, because I think the sims have a ton of utility. I think the sims do a bad job because the area where they do a bad job is, it's kind of objective. Like it's understandable once you hear it, is there, it's a sterile environment. It is a perfect replication of what you are attempting to see. And I think that's the problem. Like it is the fog and friction of war is exactly there because it's not perfect. So I think we are moving more into sims for multiple reasons. And I think sims are only going to get better and better. But there will always be a need for the live fly because they see students now coming out of pilot training who nail the sims. They're VR trainers and they are perfect because a person is effectively a robot themselves. And so when everything goes perfect, they handle everything perfectly. And Bender, you probably saw this when you were a FAPE doing, like students, when a sortie went exactly as planned, they'd be extremely good. The moment they had to think on their feet, be dynamic, like be flexible, they would just crumble because, you know, they hadn't thought through that and they couldn't make decisions on the fly. Bender, you ever see
that? That's really interesting because like you kind of almost want to teach, like that's crazy the amount of workload. Like you got to be a good pilot, you got to know all the PVIs and DWDWs and all the ground making shit up. Yeah. Like you got to know all the ABCs, dude. And then but then you also, your half of you has to be good at just respond, like the unknown, like any kind of surprise, anything goes wrong, like you were talking about, the comms were down or scratchy, so you had to use auxiliary radio, like problem solving kind of deal. Not only are you master of the jet, but then you got to problem solve. I would like to know how they could replicate. I would like to get in on, like you were saying, you're never scared in the sim because you know it's not going to crash into the ground. I would, that that's like a challenge. I think you could scare the hell out of pilots in this. I would like to get in on that. Somehow scare the crap out of pilots when they're in like a controlled JSE at Pax River or whatever. Just go in there with a mask on, scare the crap out of people.
Well, that's
something. Get the blood up.
You could put a little lever that just punches you right in the crotch.
Yeah,
if you screw around or something. Yeah. It's like,
well, I talked to a company. We could talk offline about it, but I talked to a company who's trying to do exactly that. Like, give you the tactile feeling, like that actual physical feeling of doing, like when you pull G's in the jet, you feel it in the sim. Like when you're doing all this, like you're going to experience it. But yeah,
why not? Right. Why not?
Well, it
that's the next frontier is Yeah.
Yeah, but then your sims are now just as expensive to run as the flights, you know? Fine. So that's like you run into that, like we want a high quality simulator that is cheap enough to use nonstop. And I, you know, you run into that. Bender, do you have any of those sims where you'd like you try to eject, you're doing like emergency procedures and like the engine fails and you pull the ejection handle to try to get
Nothing happens.
And it doesn't eject you. So you just see the ground like, and you're like, oh man, like that was a mini heart attack. Like, holy cow. Cause you do get like ingrained in the scenario. And there are times when like you get that ground rush where the earth is just rushing at you and you can't get out of the sim and you're like, not my favorite. Not a good.
You don't see your whole life flash before your eyes, but you see like
just a little bit,
20 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, it's true. It's like that just reminds me of that. Like when we're flying, like you don't realize how fast you're going, obviously. But then every once in a while, there'll be like these big, thick clouds that are super well defined on the edges. You know what I mean, Vader? And then all of a sudden, like you get close to one of those and you're like, we're moving, like, holy crap, that thing, you know, it feels like you're about to hit a wall, but it's obviously it's clouds, so it's not gonna do anything. But anyway, yeah, a lot of that like spatial, you know, you don't get that feel obviously in the sim super well, but honestly in the air sometimes you don't get that feel either, like ground rush and stuff. But that's interesting. Yeah, the sims have a place. You have to have them. Like if there was a squadron that got to fly 20 times a month, an F-35 squadron, but same with all fighters, but if they had enough money to fly 20 times a month with like full up like big vols or whatever, they still wouldn't be as good as the squadron that only flew 10 times a month, but also got to do the 10 sims for the high end. Again, to be able to test all the to do all the things that maybe you can't do airborne or whatever. So you have to have both. And so you're right there. Like, thank goodness they're getting good enough to where they are value added. You know, you have to have them.
Yeah. It's almost like the job of somebody, I don't know, but JSE or whatever to kind of determine what are the things that the sim is really important for, but it's always going to be a mix, like making that complimentary handshake between live flight and sim, training the right stuff. This is so apropos because it's something I've been thinking about a ton. I just can't like stop banging my head against the wall thinking, how did it get to this point? I found out recently that the manufacturers for the jets, and maybe don't quote me on this, but I'm saying this on the internet. But yeah, quote me on this.
Pull the tape.
The manufacturers get like they've monopolized the sim for their jet. So X company that manufactured the F-15E Strike Eagle, we won't name names. We'll say Slowing is the company, and they get to make the sim for that jet type, and that is crazy. I think in like the 90s or something that made sense. But now, with simulators being so important and so much better, so much high fidelity, like all the stuff we've been talking about, even as they're not quite the jet, but like as they sort of asymptotically approach live flight, it's like a new aircraft. It's like a new platform. It's crazy to think that the prime that manufactured the jet gets first crack at the sim. They have not proven, they might be the right people for the job, but they've not proven that they're the right person for the job just by making the jet. It's a totally different thing. And I think in the 90s or early 2000s or something, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was so close and sims were so shitty that it was fine. But now it's such a different animal. It's crazy to me that they get like first crack at creating the sim. They need to bring in young companies that are like 100% focused on modeling and simulation. This is all we do is F-35 sim, or all we do is Raptor sim, whether it's the scenario or the actual hardware. All that stuff is so divorced, in my opinion, from the manufacturer. It really bothered me as like a taxpayer, not only like a person in the industry who's obviously trying to swim upstream as a small company, but like, what the hell? Like, that's crazy that they get to do the sim just because they did the jet.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, I think one of the problems you run into there, and Bender, you know, I'd like to hear your input, is it's all proprietary. You know, it's like their flight modeling. It's their, like, when you're in the jet, the way the jet displays to you your weapons engagement zone, whether it's an air-to-air missile, an air-to-ground bomb, or whatever, your all of that is like proprietary. So it's like you would spend a fortune just buying the access to the software to replicate what the company does. And I agree, because our problem is we ask these massive aircraft builders to be, you know, you build aircraft, I want you to build software, and I want you to build, you know, like human factors equipment, and I want you to build sims. And then you run into the problem where you have a company whose job it is not to do sims. They're building sims and they're updating sim software. And you're like, why is the hardware and software trash in our sims? And why is it super slow and cumbersome to get them updated? Because a company who doesn't work sims is making your sims. So I totally agree. I think the problem is that how do you get a true replication of the live fly or the flight characteristics? Yeah.
They'd have to work together. I agree. You can't just do it. They can't like retrofit it to, they can't like, you know, figure it out and kind of retroactively fit it to an accurate representation of the 35. They've got to work together. And I just can't, there's not, it's not like that would bankrupt. Bleep. Like, yeah. I don't know how to beep out the companies, but like it wouldn't bankrupt Lockheed to have some other company like share notes and get the access to the OFP and get access to the, like how they've, you know, built it out. There's no way, there's got to be a way for everybody to make money and everybody to go home happy. What pisses me off is, and now I'm going to really try to not go on a rant here, but like, okay, it's not the same. I hear people complain all the time about Intuit. It's tax season. So everybody's like, oh, Intuit lobbies the government to keep taxes difficult so that they can like make money. That is crazy. Like that, if that's true, I don't know anything about taxes, but if that's even close to true, obviously that's like insane. I don't think lives are getting ruined off of that though, right? Like that's a pain in people's ass. That's about it. Maybe like one person dies from that per year, but it's not like huge. The defense version, like that trickles down. Some warfighter actually ends up with a shittier product because of these like contract negotiations 20 steps backwards. And you know, that's nuts. That like, it's not this sort of hypothetical anymore. Oh, it's, you know, tax season's a pain in the ass. If you end up with a like worse product because Lockheed's going to take like 5 years to produce a better one, what the hell, man? Like what are we doing? That's, it's war, right? It's not like it's not for fun. It's not, we're not just doing pushups. It's like, this is like, there's a real life consequence, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the that reminded me of that when you said not like doing push-ups, that Kenny Powers quote where he's like, I'm an athlete. I'm not trying to be the best at working out.
Trying to be the best at working out.
Yeah, or exercising, whatever he said.
Yeah, I would love for this to be just a Kenny Powers focused podcast. Yeah. You know, all of the Lord of the Rings comparisons I made last time, let's change those over to Kenny. Yeah,
Kenny Powers. I think the problem is that it's also our acquisitions. It's the way we ask for things because, and Julian, we were talking about this right before we recorded, is that operators, myself, Bender, the rest of the fighter pilot group, none of them, the vast majority do not want to go do the non-flying job to sit at the Pentagon or sit at some numbered Air Force or lettered Air Force like ACC or PACAF and say, buy this, don't buy this. You know, this is trash software. We need better stuff to give that end user feedback. So what we have is acquisitions officers who have no idea the end user's desires, goals, whatever. They don't know what they're buying. They don't know what they're asking for. And then when they get told like, hey, this is good by these companies, they're like, okay. And then they just buy it. And then we get it. And we're like, this is trash. This is 20 years old. Why is this on our jets? And so it's a bigger problem than just the primes, but it's also the fact that we don't have a good apparatus to compete. Because apparently the Navy a long time ago, which I hate giving attaboys to the Navy, but they embedded contracting and ops. And now you have like a major experienced guy, or whatever the Navy would call a major, and a contractor work together. So a contractor does not work in a vacuum when they're buying stuff. And turns out the Navy, I mean, MIDS, the updates, like Link 16 terminals, like the list goes on and on. The Navy beats the Air Force at acquisitions almost 100% of the time. And you're like, dang it.
Is it true, though, terrible. That they've got, like, yeah, it's insane, first of all. But they do have, from what I understand, a prioritization of they want it to be, like, from the government. The Navy wants products that are, like, homegrown, and that's probably a mistake as well. That's, like, that's not quite the solution. I don't know what it is, but, like, that, the internal, in-house, like, does think up some awesome stuff, QRIP, but it's not reliable. You can't, that's not, like, the job of the warfighter.
Yeah, unless you're going to hire all those people and pay them gobs of money to come up with cool tech. But if you're not going to do that, you have to leverage Silicon Valley to do exactly what they do and think up cool things.
That's an interesting point, though, like, bring, like, structurally, like, changing the system so that, like, the operator has to be in the, you know, in the room, so to speak, for acquisitions. That's a hell of a step in the right direction. They're not represented in the USAF.
And the funny thing is, that's what DARPA does. That's what every innovation company like yourself and all the others are like, we want end user feedback. And then our contracting office is like, no, you're fine. It's like Air Force PA. It's like they do it on purpose, getting the jets wrong. You know, it's a, like, are you trying to do a bad job? Or, you know, Bender, what were you going to say?
I don't remember. Oh, okay. I agree with everything that has been said.
Yeah. I thought I'd cut you off.
It's such a beast. Like, I don't understand. I have so many spears to chuck. I don't even know who to chuck them to. And they probably have good reasons for the way that it is, but... You know, that doesn't mean it's a, like you're saying, like the primes are a problem. Like, there's no doubt. Like, they got their claws like 18 inches deep into the flesh of the beast of the budget. You know what I mean? Like, and they always will. There's nothing we can do about it. Maybe there is. I don't know. But every time we have the cool thing about this podcast for me so far has been like I've been able to hear perspectives from different parts of the process or whatever. And the crappy part about that is like there's nobody to chuck a spear at because like everybody's got. Somebody else, like for somebody, it's somebody else's problem. And then for that person, it's somebody else's problems. It's just a beast of a deal. But yeah, I totally agree. Like, I don't know. I think there are some things we should have somebody on that knows better than me. But they, like you were saying, Julian, like the fact that Lockheed Martin owned all the rights to all the, you know, like not only did they build the airplane, the airframe, the vehicle, but they also own all the mission systems or whatever, which is all the code and all the software that goes to it. And so, it just took us forever to get anything updated because Lockheed had to do it all. Like, whereas there's these little companies that have like quick fixes. They exist. It's an easy plug and play, but they can't touch it because Lockheed owns it all or whatever. So I think there's good pushes that they're trying to get away from that. I think they call them open OFPs or something. Vader, maybe you remember.
Yeah.
So hopefully there are ways of getting away from, you know, that model to where, we can be more agile as far as like what we can do with airplanes. Cause an F-16, I mean, the airframe is so good. Like it was so good in 1970, it's still really awesome. And so if we can just quickly update the stuff that's inside it, you know, it can be a viable airplane for, you know, 20, 30 more years. Anyway, so hopefully there are good things happening. There are definitely frustrating things that again, when we do this, I'm like, you know, it's just like frustrating. You know, just banging your head against the wall. Like, why is it like that? Like, why do we have to suffer through that?
Yeah, I think some of it's accidental. I agree with you. I don't think there's like, I typically resist the sort of urge to be like, oh, there's some room of dudes laughing at, you know, wearing suits, laughing it up, counting money. Usually not. Usually it's like an accident. This is just sort of like a painful existence or whatever. But like some of it, certainly blocking, like gatekeeping. I would call it gatekeeping. I come back to that word a lot. Some of it's purposeful and some of it is sinister. That like inability to like even the contract vehicles being like structured in a way that benefits the original prime. That's just bullshit. And in any other sphere where it's like, whoopsie daisy, that's just good business. Like, sorry that you got suckered. Don't hate the player, hate the game. No problem. Whatever. I agree with you. Like, good on you. Prime contract, massive, in, you know, $2 billion company, whatever. for crushing the little man. But in the event that the warfighter, the people protecting the damn wall, are getting a lesser product, what are you doing? Like, who? What are you doing? Whose side are you on if you're, like, trying to strategically structure these contracts so that nobody else ever gets, you know, foot in the door? That's fucking nuts. That's crazy. When suddenly the stakes are, like, American warfighter live, not to sound like Patriot lip service bullshit or whatever, but, like, dude, this isn't just, like, a fun, oh, we made more money than y'all, or we quelched the competition. If some, like, guy or girl is literally going to get a shittier product in the battlefield, what are we doing? What the hell is the motivation there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a perfect example of this is, like we talked about, like, weapons. So the people who build the planes are not the people who build the weapons. But the people who build the weapons are not going to give all of their internal data on exactly how the weapons work. So then the people who build the plane just have to kind of guess at how good the weapons are. So the people who build the plane build the software and tell you, hey, this far away, you can shoot this missile. But the people who build the missile are like, yeah, you might be able to shoot farther, maybe, maybe not. You know, and you're like, you guys can't work together. Like, we can't figure out a way that we know exactly how good this is. And maybe they don't know inherently because there's not enough testing. Because again, it's at the end of the day, it comes down to money. Like, all of these primes and a lot of companies like yours, like, they can build amazing tech. And then the government just runs out of money and they're like, well, we can't afford, you know, the spinning rims. So we're just going to go with, like, the cloth seats on this one. And maybe that's the way the things work. But, you know, I think there is definitely money wasted and there are definitely opportunities taken, I would assume. Cause I mean, these are public companies, right? Like, they're taking
care of their shareholders. I like that you shifted gears and tried to blame the government there for Lockheed getting greedy. That was cool of you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame them. You know,
it is. Sorry that we've monopolized this entire area, but, acquisitions are just so unpredictable. Well, who blame was Congress.
Well, I think it was Paco Benitez who said it. I think it was in the Clinton era when it was like tons of companies. There were like 30, 40 different companies doing all of these different things. You know, they were building planes and motors and this. And then they came in and were like, hey, however you're going to do it, you figure it out. Five of you will. We're going to pay five of you. And that's why it's like, was it Lockheed Martin? It was Martin something, and now it's Lockheed Martin or Northrop and Grumman. And like, the companies just were like,
is that why they're all hyphenated?
Well, yeah, but that's I'm probably totally wrong on these, but I know what they did. It was like, there's 20 of us. Some are just going to fall off. Some are going to get bought up, and then others are going to merge. And so they were like, well, we all need to keep getting fed. So, like, how do we best do that? We just work together now. And then instead of having this, like, legitimate fight, like, it's just odd that we're like, okay, Lockheed Martin builds this one. Okay, Boeing builds that one. Like, we bought a bunch of planes from Lockheed Martin, so we're going to buy a bunch of F-15 EXs from Boeing.
They are not good for the fight. Well, they're fine. Like, they got a ton of missiles or whatever. But EXs don't exist because they're going to help us tactically. That's not why they're, you know, they're not bringing us because we need their capabilities. They're bringing them because they need someone else to build a fighter. Otherwise, Lockheed will forever own fighter, you know,
right
in the United States or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. And, like, I do think, so, yeah, I'm with y'all. Like, I want to start screaming and stuff
No, we got to start screaming. I'm ready to start screaming. Let's start screaming. Yeah.
There are like, excuses. I think sometimes there are excuses, and I don't want to be one of these, like, sacks of shit that's just like, oh, whoa, don't be greedy. Like, all right, we're dealing with humans. Like, you can account for, like, there is going to be some sort of capitalist edge here. But at the same time, there is a friggin' red line right at, and I'll help the Pentagon draw it if they want. Like, it is right at the warfighter getting a shitty product. Here's another red line for you. If the data recorder that you licensed to the Air Force sucks and is huge and takes up as much room as this bed, then, like, the guy at the Air Force invents a small one and it fits in the cockpit and it's much smaller, much more efficient, and then you sue the Air Force for going with that one, there's a red line. I'll tell you, that's a red line. That can't be excused to just, like, oh, we have to deal with Congress, and oh, acquisition cycles are unpredictable, and oh, we're trying to make money and grow as a company and support the warfighter. Not if you're suing. Like that, there are some absolutes where it's like, this has gone too far. Some of it is like, you can chalk it up to, it's tough. It's like, you know, it's a dog eat dog world or whatever. But like, no, nah, man, there's some hard and fast red lines, and I think they've stepped way over.
Yeah. I want to hear about those red lines, because we're not happy about it. Like Vader and I aren't happy like that things are subpar. Like I'm pissed. I mean, we got a Chinese missile brief, which, you know, I'm going to be real careful with this, but the amount, I don't know when the AIM-120 came out, like the AMRAAM, but it was a long time ago. It was before I joined the Air Force. Well, the first kill, right, was like a decade before
Storm.
I joined.
I thought they
anyway,
were
yeah.
shooting them.
Well, it wasn't
Desert Storm.
I think it was like Northern Watch or something. But anyway, The AMRAAM has been around for a long time. Guess what Vader and I are carrying right now on my fifth gen sick airplane? It's an AMRAAM. Do you know how many missiles China has come up with in the last 10 years? It is insane. And they don't spend even a fraction of the money that we spend on that kind of development. And we got nothing to show for it. So, I mean, it's infuriating, and it's gonna, I mean, we're gonna die. Like, people like me are going to die because of that.
Yeah, fighter.
Yeah, fifth gen. Yeah, fifth gen guys.
It's not taxes. It's not fun like, oh, you made it harder for me to do my taxes. The warfighter gets a lesser product. That's insane. I don't know how. Now we're really shifting gears, but I don't know how like a fascist country, like, because that's the benefit, right? China gets to be like, oh, sweet, Crowdbotics, your data analytics tool kicks the shit out of the one that Chinese Boeing gave us 5 years ago. So now you work for the government. Good on you. Good service to the empire or whatever. Like that's pretty sweet from a military standpoint that they get to do that they get to just be like, you are part of the government, and you're part of the government, and thanks very much for your service. But I don't know how do you balance that with like external motivation of the private sector? Because like, we only exist because there is no threat of the government doing that, I guess. Not only exists.
Yeah. Well, that's the sucky part. Like China gets
that's
the
a tricky
of both.
Part. You know?
Yeah. I mean, they get our innovation, which they take and then they improve on. They don't do any of the R&D, right? Like we do that all, like we spin our wheels, we spend all our money on it. They grab it and then they, you know, make 10 variations
maybe that's
of the
it.
Same thing, but better. And because anyway, so it's, but a lot of that, it seems like, is not greed based, but like a lot of companies in the United States are doing business with China because, I mean, there's money to be had there, but that makes us vulnerable to giving up a lot of this technology.
A fascist
free.
Company can only exist and thrive if there's like another non-fascist company.
That's right. Capitalist
on the same network that they can hack. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I think that's like a lot of the reality of it. Is that they the money that China has used to build all this, to prop up their entire economy, is most likely from U.S. investment. Because the U.S. doesn't say, private company, you can't invest in a 12% return from one, you know, from China. So they do. And then China takes that money and then builds these crazy technologies. And you're like, well, if we wanted to be like China, we would say you can't do those things, but we don't want to be like China. So we have to be better in other ways. You know, we have to beat them. And I think the 35 is a perfect example of we get in our own way. Like we let people ruin the F-35 because the F-35 as we know it today was not the original one to roll off the production line. But the Marines said, because it's going to be a joint strike fighter, which we've had joint strike fighters in the past, which was kind of a flop, which is the F-4. And the Marines said, no, we need vertical land. So everybody knows who listens to this podcast, the F-35 does not have the vertical takeoff capability. It has a short field takeoff capability, and only the F-35 Bravo has that capability and has vertical land. The F-35 is thicker than it would have been because of the lift fan in the Bravo. Like there are so many limitations that the F-35 deals with today because of the Bravo variant, which is one of the smallest buys out of all of them. And the Marines don't even want it. They want the C models more because they only wanted a few. They wanted like, hey, we need two F-35B squadrons, but most of it is going to be F-35C squadrons. So the A and the C like have to deal with the fallout from the B, and that's not acquisitions. That is Marine leadership saying this will happen and no one else telling them no. And so,
what the hell?
That's what I mean. And we do that stuff. Like the T7 is another example where the consumer, the customer kept changing what they wanted. So Boeing kept building them what they wanted, and the price tag just balloons and balloons. And it's like, stop, just ask for something realistic. But I would love to pin everything on the primes. And I think there is a lot to deal with, like some fallout there. But as the consumer, the DoD does not do themselves any favors when they say, we're going to buy 600 Raptors, and then they cut the order to 200 and something. And then they turn around and they say, we're going to buy 4,000 F-35s, and then they're probably going to get nowhere near that. And then every major purchase, the B-2, the F-22, probably the F-35, and probably the B-21, are all going to have like cut purchases because they don't want to spend the money. And we don't have a long enough vision to just stay true to the original plan. So if we had 600 Raptors right now, like, I mean, we've talked about this before, like we would not be as worried today. If we did have 4,000 F-35s, we wouldn't be worried about EXs or aging fleets because we have plenty of advanced new fighters. But I don't think we're ever
going to. I'm fixing to, like, one more beer and I'm going to start talking hardware. Like, I know what the hell I'm talking about with jet manufacturing. But, like, okay, yeah. Like the equivalent in software is you build an MVP and you can add on to it. I realize hardware is different, but like, it's funny that I just breezed past that. Hardware is different.
Yeah.
Hardware is way different. That's like let's focus on that. But like, I don't know. Don't change the scope. Don't change the product's requirements document midstream. Just roll off an MVP version of the jet and then add stuff to it. I don't know. Maybe they're just not modular enough. Maybe I just have zero idea what the fuck I'm talking about when it comes to hardware. But like, damn, dude, you don't need that. If it's so different than the original spec, then it's a new jet. And that's fine. Just get a new, maybe that exterminates this massive problem of like every jet is a 30-year or 40-year investment. The F-35 is not new, right? It's old and it's like the newest and latest and greatest. So maybe you just move on to a new jet. Maybe you get what you get, and then the next version, okay, we'll do vertical land and takeoff capability. That's no longer the F-35 then. We're talking about a new jet.
Well, I mean, that's what we've always done. We've said, like, hey, you know, do you want the, like, was it XF-16 or the XF-17? And the Air Force bought the XF-16, turned into the F-16, and then the XF-17 turned into the F-18 that the Navy bought, because the Navy was like, I don't want what the Air Force wants. We have different requirements. So they bought their own thing. But instead of let everybody buy the jet they wanted one common jet, which I think the commonality of parts between all three F-35s is like 17% like common parts.
So there you go. Exactly.
It's different wings. It's different. I mean, I'm talking like, I know, Bender, you actually fly the darn thing. But
I probably know less than you, to be completely honest. But that's terrible. 17%. Gosh.
But
I believe I'm so glad you said it's under 50%, because I was sitting here like, oh man, God.
Way under.
Ruined my credibility, dude. I don't know what I'm talking about.
But you look at, and the 35 is exactly that. The 35 is it's an MVP. The first F-35s that rolled off the line are not going to be the ones we take to war. Those were like, oh, cool, look at us, fancy F-35. And then those are just going to get like probably boneyarded like they're doing with the early Raptors. And then now we're talking about the Block 4 F-35, which is like the next generation of 35s. So there's like this iterative process. Like you said, hardware is different, but it's also the same. Like they're doing exactly that with the 35.
And now let's do it. Let's take the fucking mask off. Let's us three dudes start talking hardware. Why is the first version V1 of the F-35 rolled right off the line not combat capable? There, that might be a problem then. If the original spec, the original scope of that product was insufficient, that seems like a point of attack more than like,
well,
whatever the hell I was bitching about.
It's a software thing. So hardware, the F-35, my understanding, Bender, maybe you can talk to it. Maybe I'm getting out of my lane. But the Bender, do you want to field this?
Why does it take so much iteration post-production, Bender?
We did a podcast with Billy Flynn, who was the Lockheed Martin's test pilot for it, whatever, and he's gonna be mad if he listens to this. He always gets mad at me when I just like make stuff up, but I'm gonna do it anyway.
I'm sorry, Bill. Damn it! I shouldn't have gotten outside of data analytics, dude.
No, it's good. We gotta have old Billy correct the record. We will, I'm sure, at some point. But yeah. Right, I think Vader, you probably remember, but they just needed to get it off the line, right? Like that was the. Because of the pressures of, like, we don't have a long-term strategy, right? So, a jet needed to be kicked off the line so that Congress, it could justify the budget, how much money we paid for it, basically. And it was not capable. It couldn't descend at a reasonable rate. So, like, and it couldn't pull any Gs. If it got struck by lightning, it was going to explode into a bazillion pieces. Like, all those things came with the first jets. And those jets are not... the first couple hundred F-35s will never be combat airplanes because they just weren't made that way. So they were like built to be the platform that we'd then build off of. But even if we order 1,800 of these things or however many we're supposed to have, 200 are not going to be useful to us. We're going to scrap them or whatever, or make them into red air or whatever we end up doing. Anyway, there's so many source issues with the whole thing, and smarter people than me can opine on it, but...
Yeah, I'm
it's screwed up.
Us down this, this
no,
lane.
It's good.
Y'all,
well, I think it was. It up. Yeah, I think it was a knee-jerk reaction to the F-22 because the F-22 is the opposite. We will not roll one off the factory until the it's entirely combat capable. And so what they did was waited and waited, and the 1990s technology, like, finally came out in the 2006s, but really wasn't there until like the 10s and 12s. And so we're almost 20 years deep in the Raptor. So like, talk about how technology like doubles every 18 months or whatever that like law is. But now you're 20 years in and you're like, cool, the jet's ready to start fighting. So I think standard response is like idle or max AB. They just said like, okay, we're going to do the exact opposite. We're not going to wait for it to be perfect. We're just going to get close and then we're just going to update it. Because, I mean, even now, F-16s, F-15s, F-35s, F-22s, every jet in anywhere from like a couple months to a year is getting a new operating system with new capabilities, new tech, all that. So everything is always getting updated. But yeah, the fact that it's rolling off the line, like not able to do fighter things is I would say a foul. But again, it was like a knee-jerk reaction to just the previous failures of the last jet that they bought, which was the F-22 that we cut in 2012, because sequestration and government ran out of money. So they're like, well, future us may be mad, but today it makes a good idea. Frustrating.
Yeah,
it is frustrating. Luckily, it's not a goose and gander sort of deal. Like, not everything's that complicated. So. Maybe I'm walking it back a little bit and I already stuck my neck out trying to talk the problems of manufacturing a jet, but not everything's that complicated. It doesn't have to be. You can, at least with software, you can roll out a version of the product that meets the spec, that meets the mission need, that enables a warfighter, and then iterate on it based on some minor iteration. I would say like a little iteration.
Well, I think SCAR, from Blue Force Technology. SCAR, like they said, like they are doing exactly that. Blue Force is the hardware, like the shells and all the equipment side. And then they're working with other people on like the power plant and the software and all that. Like, I think Nicholas Chalin or Chalain, I don't know how to say it. Julian, you know him.
Jalen is French.
There it is. Yeah, Frenchy. I'm a bit deep. Well, yeah. I'm American, yeah. So. No. But he had a great point of like, each organization builds what they're experts at. Like, you are an expert at building a flying machine. Leave a space for a computer that an expert computer building company will make to fit in that space. And then a software company will put software on that. And that's what I think, kind of what you're probably getting at, is like these primes need to be less primes and more a conglomeration of, we build exquisite tech because all of us are experts in our field, and we bring all that together because the sum of all of our parts is more than us individually. So I don't know.
Yeah. That's, and like, you can still make money. You can still make a ton of money. I cannot be convinced that like you lose out if you do it that way. If you bring in some specialist, and maybe I know it's like such a crazy, it goes completely against a lot of my philosophy, but like potentially there needs to be like a clause or something that mandates the tip-top layer or the partnership between a prime, a very trusted prime, and a brand new tiny little company that's like a specialist, and not brand new, but like expertise, tiny little niche, you know, company like Crowdbotics to do something very, very specialized on top of a company that is gamed the damn system, like really, really good at contracting, has contract vehicles in place already, can move through paperwork like knife through butter, can really like, you know, roll out shit hand in fist with the government, hand in glove with the government, but can't deliver on like a data analytics app. Maybe I don't want to mandate shit. I don't want to tell anybody how to do like private sector contracting, but like maybe you want to encourage this sort of relationship between tiny and huge.
Yeah. Well, and I think
speaking of Paco, he's like optimistic. I talked to him, it's been about a year, but I talked to him a little while ago and he was saying he thinks it's going that way. So.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. There. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's good movement. I mean, the stuff that you guys are doing, like Crowdbot, I don't know, like that's some of the first podcasts that we had, right? I mean, it's exciting for us to hear that there is movement going on in things that we care about as far as end users go. And then, you know, it's not ideal obviously yet. And it probably could never be as fast as we want it to be, because of a lot of systemic kind of limitations. But at least there is movement going in the right direction. It feels like hopefully more movement in the right direction than there is, you know, stonewalling that stops it. But I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But it is interesting, like you're saying, the big companies, I think it's the innovator's dilemma. You probably know Julian way more than I do, but that's like one of the anyway, it's some business thing that I read about in a book, and I don't know well enough I read a book and it talked about the innovator's dilemma, right? This big business, like once you get to a prime, yeah. Like risk is not, you know, it's not acceptable anymore. Like, right. So
all
incentives for them are to completely stiff arm any risk and to just like keep feeding the, you know, their investors, their nice little, you know, quarterly return or whatever. Whereas you guys are willing to take a ton of risk because we need things to be different or whatever. And there's no right now, hopefully we bring that those kind of companies can fill the gap as we start to bring them up. But right now, or at least for the past, totally. However long, like that has not been a part of, you know, the way the military gets their stuff.
If the primes are risk averse, good Lord, the government's like 2x risk averse. Like that, if effectiveness and efficiency way down on the bottom of the list, the risk, the contracts are written such that get as little risk as possible. And one fringe benefit, or I don't know if it's a benefit or a disaster, but like barrier to entry is pretty high for companies. Barrier to exit is even higher. And especially with like COVID, it's status quo, baby. Like do not shed, do not look for new bids, do not look for new products or software tools. It is outright, even with services, defense contractors, it's like, stick with what we got. The barrier to exit is enormous for the DoD.
Yeah. Well, and I think I think your idea for having some sort of contracting requirements, you know, there's already like disabled veteran requirements, there's, you know, small business requirements, there's contract requirements. I can't imagine that one more requirement would make the entire thing topple, you know? So having the ability to say, hey, primes and these innovation companies, which we're spending money on as well, work together to make the best possible tech. And on that,
Vader can edit that out later.
Yeah, that's right. Mark the clip.
Take care of that post. Yeah, Jamie.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Right. I don't know if that's like the solution to just nurse the hell out of Silicon Valley. It can't be. I don't have that much respect for Silicon Valley, but like
The banks are good, though, so that's good.
Yeah.
What's that? The weather? The weather's pretty sweet.
No, the banks.
I said the banks. The banks are good.
The banks are, like, top-notch, dude. They just can't break them. You can try to do a run on them. You do anything you can do.
That's right.
Bring in crypto. Rock solid, baby. Like, no problem.
That's right.
I don't want to be like, oh, you know, disruption. It's a young man's game. Get the new upcoming companies in here to do the specialized work. There's not necessarily a reason that the old guard, like companies that have really gamed the system or whatever, can't stay in the game. You need that. You need like that. It's a tough, and it needs to be tough, acquisition cycle. But there's got to be room to still make billions of dollars hand over fist and bring better products like out, you know, from specialist. Really what we're talking about is specialist expertise, stuff that like is not just easy to do. It's specialized, either AI or ML, data analytics, data science kind of crap is a good representation of it. There's got to be a way for somebody to still make billions of dollars and bring in a product. And again, my red line is like, how dare you monopolize a contract or monopolize an area of contracting for money if it's going to roll down to a dude who literally doesn't get a product that they need and gets killed for it. Like, yeah.
I think
this isn't an insurmountable challenge. It's not some sort of black box where like, oh, it's so complicated. You don't understand. It is complicated and I don't understand it, but bullshit. Like you expose yourself when you start suing the government for inventing a better, much cheaper fraction of the cost, you know, product instead of buying your $29 million, $25 million a pop product. Like, okay, now you've exposed, like, there is a crack in the system or whatever. That's bullshit.
Yeah. Total foul. Well, it doesn't surprise me that a big company would kind of lose sight of the end goal because, you know, at some point it just, people just become numbers or cogs or whatever analogy you want to use. But we gotta skedaddle because we're getting late in the day.
Sweet.
But yeah, Julian, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Go ahead and give everybody your contact info so all the Lockheed execs who listen to the podcast can reach out.
Exactly. Here's my address and social. So if you have a white van, windowless van, you can shove me into it. My name's Julian. My opinions are my own. I don't want this to reflect poorly on the company or anything. I work for a small company called Crowdbotics. We are doing data analytics for USAF. I don't want to say like pigeonhole us into one type of thing, but so far we're doing fighter jet data analytics, some debrief functionality, but some trend analysis and tactics development, hopefully. But in general, I think modernizing data across the DoD is necessary, and we could be a contender or at least chip in to help out there. My name's Julian. If you'd like to reach out and talk about that, julian@crowdbotics.com, crowdbotics, like robotics, and Julian, J-U-L-I-A-N. Hopefully I did not screw. No, I spoke out of turn, so hopefully I didn't mess up y'all's reputation. Sorry, Billy.
We don't have one.
Billy, wherever you are.
No, we're good. And I'll have Julian's email in the show notes if you'd like, down at the bottom. And remember, reach out to us. Let us know what you think of our new hats. Bender's got the seven panel hat, which I'm super jelly about. But don't worry. We're going to have more hats on the way. Julian will get himself one, and we'll send him one. And then we've got – so let us know what you think about the hats. info@kodiakshack.com. Check out the website, kodiakshack.com. Like, subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. Thank you, everybody. And, again, donations are always open. All right. See you guys.
See ya.
Thanks for having
Julian.
Me.
Talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. See you guys.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.